Okay. The time is 1:02 Central Time on July 21st, 2026, and I am convening this video and telephone conference meeting of the Assessment Investment Committee of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act and the Association's antitrust policy. All information disclosed or discussed is to be used only for carrying out the business of the association. Proper notice of the meeting was filed on July 13th, 2026, and published in the Texas Register in accordance with the Texas Open Meetings Act. A copy of the notice should be attached to the summary of the official minutes of this meeting. We do have a quorum, as myself and Mark are here. Ted Kennedy could not join, at least we don't expect him today. Also in attendance from the association, Bart Bowles, Jan Graber, Jarrett Terry, Topping Haggerty, and counsel Dan Price. And then from TDI, we have Sean Martin. So welcome, everybody. I think we can jump right into item one, which is the consent agenda. And I think the only item we have for that is the official minutes. So if there's any corrections otherwise, I guess I would take a motion.
So moved.
All right, I'll second. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
I
I think everybody would have to be since the motion covered both of us. Brings us to item two. I'll scroll as well here if I can find my cursor. All right. Consideration of possible action on obligations, expenses, and the net position for active insolvencies. And I think, Jan, you were going to run with that.
Yes, so I'll go back to sharing my screen if you give me just a second. Okay, so you guys can see that, okay?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So just bear with me. I'm trying to use PowerPoint as opposed to scrolling as Bart has done in the past. So here is so you guys see this exhibit okay?
Yes,
I can.
Okay,
Yep.
so this is it's net position schedule. It's on page 2-2 of your meeting materials. And I think that this is really one of the most important agenda items because it kind of lays the foundation for the committee's recommendation later on under agenda items 3 and 4 regarding investments, assessments, and refunds. And I think you saw this information presented in this format for the first time last January. The data, of course, has been updated and I think it provides a pretty clear picture of the financial position of each active estate. So we've titled this exhibit Net Position Schedule. And that's because rather than looking only at, cash, we're now looking at all the major components that determine whether an estate ultimately has sufficient resources to meet its obligations. So kind of walking through this exhibit, we begin with cash, this column here. And that's cash equivalents, investment holdings that are currently attributable to each estate. And then we add any kind of anticipated receivables or other assets, such as, expected distributions from receivership estates or accrued interest. And then we subtract out any outstanding liabilities. And this includes things like interstate loans, loans from the insolvency expense account or the administrative expense account. And then after that, we deduct our projected remaining policy obligations. And these obligations are separated between amounts that we expect to pay during the next 12 months. And then obligations, this non-current column, are obligations expected beyond 1 year. So after all of these items, after we've accounted for all of these items, we arrive at this projected net position for each estate. And I'd say to focus less on these individual components for each estate and more on this final projected net position column, because that's really what ultimately will drive our recommendations on future assessments and refunds. So, looking across all our active insolvencies, the overall picture remains very strong. As of May 31st, the combined projected net position across all estates is about 99, that's that number here, 99.95 million. And that reflects total cash and investments of approximately 106 and a half million, and then offset by projected liabilities and remaining insurance obligations. Our review does not really identify any state that creates an immediate need for additional assessment funding. So we'll drill down a little bit on some of the key estates. So starting with Bankers Life and Colorado Bankers, you'll recall that this is part of the Global Bankers Insurance Group. Bankers Life currently reflects a projected position, positive net position of about 28.3 million. And Colorado Bankers reflects a projected positive net position of about 12.7 million. The January 2nd, 2026 assumption reinsurance transaction with Continental General substantially resolved the covered life insurance and annuity obligations and any remaining obligations, specifically that 668,000 current obligation for Colorado Bankers. That reflects obligations that were associated with those policies that Continental General did not assume. You'll recall that those were policies that had, attained ages over age 96, some pre-2026 deaths, some unsubmitted claims, some uncashed post-liquidation checks, and then interest on some closed premium deposit funds. So collectively, we refer to those as retained policies. So together for Bankers and Colorado Bankers, we have a total of about 41.8 million remaining from Class B assessments, investment earnings, and estate recoveries after payment of claims and administrative expenses. So it's important to know that these remaining funds are still subject to the early access agreement with the liquidator and potential clawback provisions. So we've evaluated options for the treatment and the ultimate use of these funds, and we'll discuss some of those during our executive session. Looking at Friday Healthcare, that has a projected net position of about 1.879 million. Our only remaining exposure is $2 million, and that's related to a claims payment dispute with a provider. And we'll talk about that, at our upcoming board meeting. You'll also see that several of these estates have projected net or negative balances, and a negative projected balance doesn't necessarily indicate that there's a funding problem. Most of the estates have already been authorized to receive support from the insolvency expense account or they're winding down. So if we look at some of the estates with negative balance, for example, Southland National, that assumption reinsurance transaction that transferred covered SNC life insurance obligations to Continental General, that successfully closed and was funded on June 1st of this year. We contributed about $4.9 million toward that transaction, and that was pursuant to prior board authorization. And so, as a result of that transaction, responsibility for the covered SNC life insurance policies have transitioned from the Guaranty Association to Continental General. You also see Bright Healthcare. The claims processing for Bright is substantially complete. There's only timely filed claims, provider disputes, and proof of claim referrals that remain. To date, we've paid about $10.7 million in covered claims and related expenses. We also submitted a second early access request, and the special deputy receiver distributed about $1.7 million to us on June 24th. Also, North Carolina Mutual, that was that settlement program. It's moved to the implementation phase following the June 5th approval by TDI of our replacement forms. So now we're in the process of actively distributing settlement letters and policy packages to affected policyholders, including newly issued whole life policies, along with required premium election and payment authorization forms. And remember that these replacement policies are going to be administered by Texas Life and Health Guarantee Association staff. To date, we paid 167, a little bit over than that claims, and those totaled about $27.5 million. And finally, you'll note that this bottom line here, that's our insolvency expense account, and that also remains in a very strong position with a projected net position of about $47.8 million. So you'll recall that that account has provided quite a bit of flexibility over the last several years by allowing us to pay both insolvency-related expenses and certain administrative expenses without requiring additional assessments from member companies. So, although this schedule reflects where most estates stand individually, we really manage them from a broader, financial perspective, from broader financial resources that are available to us. I'd say the key takeaways from this schedule is that our active insolvencies remain financially sound. We currently have sufficient resources to meet our projected obligations. And based on this review, we're not recommending a Class B assessment or refund at this time. So we're happy to answer any questions regarding this schedule if you have any, or we can move on to the next agenda item.
Can I throw one thing in there, Jan, please?
Of course.
So this is my fault, but late last week, after the material had gone out, we got notification that there were some retained obligations for North Carolina Mutual. So those obligations have been adjusted as of May 31st. They're just not reflected in the schedule because the schedule had already gone out. And that was an additional $3.7 million in obligations. So the North Carolina Mutual would be about $3.8 million to the negative there.
Okay,
That's
thank you,
it.
Garrett.
And is that one of the ones covered by the insolvency expense account?
It is, yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Any other questions for Jan or Jarrett?
This is Sean Martin with TDI. If I could ask a couple of quick questions. Jan, the difference from last year about this time, if y'all have that amount for the projected net position, do
I think I have a sheet of paper that has what we were showing as of our last meeting. It was as of November 30th, but I
sure.
can pull up last May.
I'm guessing, and I don't know fiscally when that is reviewed, whatever would be the most relevant. I'm just curious what the delta on that is from last year.
Let's see. Let me pull that up real quick.
I have it already if you
Oh,
wanted
do
to
you?
begin.
Okay, go
Yeah.
ahead, Jarrett.
So the projected net position as of May 31st, 2025 was about 56 million. And so we received roughly 40 something million dollars in distribution since last year.
And Sean, that's almost all Colorado Bankers and Bankers Life. That's because of the distributions from the receivership estate. After the receivership estate received substantial distributions from the special master handling the criminal case against Greg Lindbergh.
That's what I figured. Thanks, Bart. And the insolvency expense account, which is at 47.8 mil, what was that?
It was right at 51 million last year.
Okay. Thanks, guys. I apologize for the interruption.
No
No
problem.
worries. Muting myself again.
Right. Any other questions on the net position schedule? All right. If not, let's move to item three, associations investments. And I think
And I
Jarrett.
believe Jarrett's going to describe how we're holding our investments.
If you want to get me to page 3.1,
Hold on. That one.
one up, please. One more up. No, I think you're going the wrong way. I meant the first page of the section. Sorry.
Oh, okay. I didn't put that one in our power, my
Okay, well,
PowerPoint,
that's fine.
but
So it's
I can pull it up if it would
yeah.
be helpful.
No, it's fine. I'll go over it. So it's just the description of how the Guaranty Association holds its investments. We currently hold it in four different ways: cash accounts with JPMorgan Chase Bank, U.S. Treasury bills notes, money market mutual funds in various places, and then the NOLGA escrow account for Bankers Life and Colorado Bankers. If you recall from the last meeting, we had talked about closing that account down and transferring those funds to the Guaranty Association, which we did in April. We sent a notice to NOLGA. They sent us the funds on April 24th, and on April 24th, they distributed more funds into those escrow accounts. So those still are holding monies, and we are currently working with NOLGA to get those transferred back to the GA and close that escrow account down for good.
Jared, let's clarify. When you say they distributed, the estate made an additional early access distribution to the Guaranty Associations through NOLGA, and NOLGA just put those monies in each Guaranty Association's escrow account.
No. So the GA is still following the investment plans of holding around 250,000 in cash, which is the FDIC limit, and then another approximately 2 million in money market funds. And we, if you recall, we originally were trying to follow a plan of about 2 million maturing each quarter, and if we didn't need it, we would reinvest it. With the yield curve changing over the last couple of years, and with Friday Bright and Bankers and Colorado Bankers, we needed access to quick cash. So we started that Morgan Money account where we could put money into there, and we invested our treasuries in more short term because we were actually getting a better yield. That investment strategy has changed a little bit the last couple of times because the yield curve is kind of normalized, and so now you're getting better yields going out a little bit. And so between getting those better yields and trying to match our cash flow, because we have what we anticipate are upcoming insolvencies that we may need to use money for, so we now have some of those investments out about a year. So that's kind of taking advantage of that yield curve and matching our cash flows. Let's go to, okay, so that's the next page there. So this is where our cash and money market funds are. And you can see we have April 30th and May 31st. First block there is the Morgan Stanley Bank Deposit Program. That's our money market funds for Morgan Stanley. As you see, we don't keep very much cash in there. Try to have that invested. The next block is the money market funds at JP Morgan. And this is where we keep the around 250,000 and plus the 2 million that we keep on the money market funds. You'll see May has a little bit higher. That's just a timing issue. We got funds in before or investments that matured before we were able to reinvest them the following day. Next block is the money market funds at Morgan Money. That's where we put all the cash from Bankers and Colorado Bankers so we could have access to quick liquid funds. And then the cash in the bank accounts that we keep there. The collection account expense funds and claims account are the cash accounts that don't exceed 250, and then you'll see the additional amounts that Bart and I were talking about from the NOLGA escrow accounts there at the bottom. So total cash and money market funds about 85 million in May. Next page, please. Unless there are any questions, please feel free to interrupt if you've got any questions. So this is our investments. Not very complicated. We have it at Morgan Stanley and JP Morgan Securities, about 31 at Morgan Stanley and about 7 at JP Morgan Securities. Once again, at May 31st, there was a timing issue where the bond matured at the end of the month, and then we reinvested at the beginning of the next month. So we're looking at about 120 million as of 5/31 in cash and equivalents. Next page, please. So this is what we have in our two broker accounts for the treasuries. And then the data up at the top is just kind of giving you a benchmark for measuring how we our yield in both of the treasuries and our yield in the Morgan money. So up at the top is the current treasury yields as of July 8th. You can see, as I talked about, the yield curve has gotten more normalized. The further out you go, the higher yields you get. We're looking at 30 days is 3.67. Our weighted average maturity is about 45 days in our Morgan money, and we're about 3.5. And then in our US Treasuries, we're about 3.6. Any questions?
None for me. Mark, anything?
No, sir.
I think that's it on the investments.
All right. Thank you, Jarrett. If we have no other questions, I guess we'll move to item four, assessments and refunds. And Jan, is this you again?
Yes. So we'll start off. We'll give you kind of a high level discussion here, and then we'll discuss in executive session some of the options for dealing with the remaining Bankers Life Colorado Bankers Fund, which, as I mentioned earlier, we're subject to clawback under the early access agreement. So starting with Class A assessments, which you'll recall are used to fund administrative and general expenses that are not attributable to a specific insolvency. Historically, those assessments have been called only when necessary. And you'll recall that recently the board has adopted a strategy of minimizing Class A assessments whenever possible by utilizing recoveries from receivership estates, investment earnings, and funds that were previously authorized by the board for that purpose. Initially, those expenses were funded from the Lincoln Memorial Life and Memorial Service Life recoveries, and then later those funds were transferred into the insolvency expense account, and the board authorized continued use of those funds while also establishing the operating expense account as a primary source for ongoing administrative expenses. And that strategy continues to work well. At our January committee meeting, administrative expenses totaled about 847,000, while interest earnings allocated to the operating expense account exceeded 965,000. At this time, the operating expense account currently has a surplus of about 8.7 million. And so as we look forward through the remainder of 2026, we're estimating a approximately 1.6 million in additional administrative expenses, and they'd be based on the current treasury yields and expected cash flows. We're also estimating about 1.7 million in additional investment income during the balance of the year. So, given the existing surplus and the projected earnings, we don't recommend a Class A assessment in 2026. Are there any questions regarding the Class A recommendation before I move to Class B?
Not for me.
No, ma'am.
Okay, so moving on to Class B, which, as you know, these are used to fund covered obligations that are associated with a specific insolvency. Previously, the board had authorized the use of the insolvency expense account funds to pay insolvency-related expenses for seven specific insolvencies, reducing or eliminating the need for additional assessments. We'll continue to use the insolvency expense account to pay for obligations for these insolvencies until the board, instructs us otherwise, or that insolvency expense account is exhausted, or there's no more expenses for those insolvencies. To date, we've paid $7.3 million from the insolvency expense account for these insolvencies, and that includes a $4.94 million payment to fund the assumption of the life insurance policy obligations for Southland National Life Insurance Company. That payment fulfilled all of our policy obligations for Southland National. And again, based on that net position schedule showing projected assets and anticipated recoveries, remaining liabilities, expected policy obligations, resulting in an overall net position of $99.9 million, we are not anticipating the need for an additional assessment during 2026. And we are not recommending that the committee authorize a Class B assessment this year. But we do need to look ahead to 2027. And even though we're not recommending a Class B assessment this year, we do want the committee to be aware of one situation that we're actively monitoring, and that's with PHL, Variable Life Insurance Company. That remains in rehabilitation in Connecticut. And at the end of last year, the rehabilitator publicly announced that rehabilitation is no longer considered feasible and that liquidation is expected. So there hasn't been a liquidation order issued yet or entered yet. It is anticipated that liquidation could occur during 2027. So why does this matter? If a liquidation order is entered, then we become responsible for those covered policy obligations, and we'll need to prepare for a potential assessment. So we've kind of started that prep process. We started evaluating a reallocation of the Class B assessment funds from a prior annuity assessment fund to fund a portion of the PHL obligations. And we've also started thinking through the assessable annuity premium reporting and possible disparities in members' assessable premiums that would be used for this assessment. And more on that when we talk about the assessment protest. But we're continuing to work with NOLGA, the NOLGA Task Force, to evaluate the potential exposure and prepare preliminary funding estimates and evaluating the options that could reduce the need for future assessments. So some of those planning discussions involve legal and strategic considerations that will continue at discussion on in the executive session. Moving on to refunds. So twice each year, we review the financial position of every insolvency to determine whether funds collected through assessments and subsequent recoveries exceed what will ultimately be needed to satisfy any remaining obligations. And based on the net position schedule that we looked at earlier, and the use of the insolvency expense account to pay for other insolvencies, we're not recommending a refund for 2026. But we also need to look at excess funds associated with Bankers and Colorado Bankers. And, we mentioned earlier that's about $41.8 million in excess funds remain from assessment collections and investment earnings and recoveries. And although that appears to represent excess funds, Those monies remain subject to provisions contained in the early access agreement with the liquidator, including the potential clawback provision. So, because of this, and before making any recommendation regarding those funds, we think it's appropriate to evaluate all the available options, and we'll discuss those considerations with the committee in executive session. And then looking at credit balances, these are historical credit balances, and I think I have an exhibit here. So prior to 2017, we refunded excess assessments to member companies after all the final obligations and expenses were determined. And that practice was discontinued just because of the administrative complexity that's associated with premium tax offsets. And so, as a result, member company credit balances now total about $3.95 million, and that's across 244 companies. As you can see in this chart, the balances are highly concentrated, with 12 companies accounting for more than half of the total credit balance. I've also shown you here, the maximum credit balance is about $475,000. The minimum is less than 10 cents. And on average, across the 244 companies, the average credit balance is a little over $16,000. And then you'll see, I'm showing you a distribution of where the credit balances are as far as the amount. So we have about 47% have a balance in excess of 100,000, 21% between 50 and 100, 14% between 25 and 50, and 18% less than 25. Thousand. So again, these represent refunds that were previously authorized by the board, but they were not paid directly to members because those refunds were instead applied as credits against future assessments. And then in situations where a member company had little or no assessment due, those unused refunds remained on our books as a credit balance. And the statutory premium tax allocation rules make a direct cash refund really complicated, more complicated than it might appear. So at first glance, it might seem like you can just simply issue a refund check, but it's a little bit more complicated than that because every cash refund must be allocated between the member company and the Commissioner of Insurance based on the premium tax offsets that have previously been taken by that member. So a lot of these credits date back decades, and they're comprised of numerous historical assessments. And most of the time, the maximum premium tax offset, all of the premium tax offset, that's already been taken. So trying to reconstruct those premium tax histories for hundreds of companies, that re require an extensive review that would involve both the comptroller and our historical records. And in some cases, some of that information might not be available. So we aren't recommending making a recommendation now, but we'll discuss some of the possible alternatives with the committee in executive session. And then finally, the assessment protest.
Hey, Jan, can I jump in real quick? The
Sure.
credit balances, are they by company and by line? Health, life, and annuity.
Yeah, what I have is by NAIC number, but I'm looking at Jared and Bart. I'm assuming we can go back and tie that to a line of business. I would think the problem would be is that, some of these assessments were a long time ago, so that would take some research, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
No, Jim, they tie back to the original assessment for the
Right.
insolvency that created the refund. And when that was done on these assessments, they were done by the company, not specifically by the line of business account.
Okay.
So a company may have a refund, let's say of $5,000 from ABC Life Insurance Company insolvency. ABC, when was it last assessed? It may have been assessed in 2001. You have to go back and look at that company's premium tax offset for the assessment on that insolvency in 2001. Had they taken everything? So
Yeah.
for every dollar that they got in credit from the different insolvencies being refunded, you have to go back and look at each one of those assessments and the premium tax offsets for each one of those
Yeah.
assessments. And it gets really complicated. So it's by company and by assessment, but not specifically by line.
Okay. And I wasn't asking specifically for the reason about making a refund, but rather if we had a health insolvency or a life and annuity insolvency, how much of those would be taken, I guess, if you will, to satisfy whatever assessment might be for any upcoming insolvency.
I would say these when you go back and look at the historical listing of if you take a company and its credit balance and you look at the history of how it got there, all the different insolvencies involved and all the different assessments, it covers all lines of business. So it's very
Okay.
fungible.
So
It
it's not
could be used to pay for any insolvency.
okay. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Any
I'm
other
sorry, Jen. Yeah.
question? Oh, no, that's fine. Any other questions before we go on to the assessment protest? And again, we'll talk about each of these issues in a little bit more detail in executive session. Okay, so just a quick update, high-level update on the assessment protest. You'll recall that we had a member company challenge its assessment based on revised assessable premium filings that were submitted after the assessment had already been calculated. And last July, the board recommended that that we send a letter to the Texas Department of Insurance asking that they deny that protest while also encouraging broader industry guidance regarding assessable premium reporting. So, to date, I don't know that anything has been done on that from a TDI perspective. And just to think about this protest right now just involves one company, but there's a broader issue that extends beyond a single assessment. And so that raises questions regarding, consistency in premium reporting among member companies and, whether there needs to be additional guidance, whether that's appropriate so that we ensure that there's equitable treatment across the industry. And we'll get into this in more detail during the executive session. So, any questions on the assessment protest at this point?
Not here.
None.
Okay, so just to summarize this whole section, I know I've been talking a lot. So, our recommendations under this agenda item is, we're not recommending a Class A assessment in 2026. We're not recommending a Class B assessment in 2026. We are not recommending refunds at this time, and then we'll continue to evaluate the Bankers Life and Colorado Bankers Excess Fund and those historical credit balances in executive session.
Very
So,
good.
unless there's any other questions, we can move on.
Yep. All right. Item five is the annual review of the committee's charter. And I think you're
Oh,
probably up again, Jan. Yep.
yeah. So, well, yeah. Annually, the committee will review its charter and look at any possible enhancements or revisions that need to be made. Basically, the only proposed changes are in the assessment section of Section 2 of the Charter on Responsibilities and Duties. They're pretty straightforward. The first item we changed is to Item 1 regarding review of future contractual obligations requiring funding by the association and related assessment needs. All we did is we clarified that these future contractual obligations are insurance policy and annuity obligations. And then the second change was made in that section as well. There was an item that stated, overseeing the transition of an assessment process under the amended Association Act. And this item in the charter was to account for the treatment of long-term care under the Association Act. And now that item or that is complete. And so that item can be deleted.
Okay. The copy of the charter that was in the public materials on the website, is that the, I assume, post changes? There are no red lines. That's all I just
No, I
wrote.
noticed that when I was looking at it this morning. No, that the one that is in the meeting materials that actually has
They've
the
been
changes
incorporated. Okay. Yeah.
incorporated.
Well, very good. Thank you. All right. No questions from me. Mark, any questions?
No, sir.
All right. And then I think we need to adopt them. Is that correct?
Yes.
And I know I don't know if you have the resolution, but
Yeah, let
I
me
can
pull it up.
scroll down and I've got the public one up. So,
PDF page 29, Jim.
yep. I can read it if
Yeah,
that's
let me
preferable.
get, yeah, let me pull it up real quick.
Okay. It's short, so I could read it if necessary, but I don't
Okay.
think it'll be controversial, so.
Sure. Yes. All right. So can you see that? And you
Yeah,
said, Dan, it was
that's the first
on
one.
29.
29, yeah.
That's my cursor. See, I was trying not to have to scroll through this because I know I saw Bart do it at the board meeting and it makes me dizzy. So I thought I won't scroll, but now I understand a little
Yeah.
bit more why he
Well,
scrolls.
yeah, I have
So
them both up on various monitors. And Jan has it up there, the recommended resolution with respect to the charter. Take a motion.
so moved.
All right, and I'll second that. All in favor, say aye. All
Aye.
right, the resolution, aye, the resolution is adopted. All right. I think that brings us to item six. Is that right? Executive session.
Yes.
And I can read the language to recess. Are we ready to do that?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. The time is 1:45 Central Time on July 21st, 2026, and I am recessing the regular session of the Assessment Investment Committee meeting of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association. In order for the committee to meet in executive session pursuant to the Open Meetings Act. All right, the time is 2:33 Central Time. Let me make sure I've got the right one. Reconvene. The executive session of the Assessment Investment Committee meeting has concluded, and I am reconvening the regular session of the Assessment Investment Committee pursuant to the Open Meetings Act. All right, it brings us to item seven, possible action items arising out of executive session, and I don't think we have any, correct?
Correct.
Correct.
Item eight, I guess just consideration of the committee calendar.
And so our next meeting, I believe, is January
Tuesday, January 19th. Yes.
19th. Yes.
All right.
I'm sorry. I'll have to let the committee know I'll be unable to attend that meeting.
Good for you, Bart.
Thank you.
I'm
All right.
jealous.
Yep, same. Any other discussion for the group? All right, I guess. I'll adjourn. The time is 2:34 Central Time on July 21st, 2026, and this meeting of the Assessment Investment Committee of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association is adjourned.